Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back with another UFC Fight Night this weekend. UFC Vegas 98, of course, going down at the UFC Apex. After this one, only two more, then no more Apex cards for the foreseeable future until probably January. I can't lie, they're probably going to give us another one. It's absolutely ridiculous. Also on today's episode, we will be looking at NFL Week 6. Drop your official predictions. Of course, UFC Vegas 98 predictions, if you didn't already assume by the fact that I said, hey, we have another UFC event this weekend. We're also going to be reviewing, and I'm just going to be giving my thoughts on Reacher Season 1, starring Thad Castle. I forgot his actor's name. We'll be talking about that in a second. Also going to be looking at the updated top 10 for every position in fantasy football, new UFC news, pop culture, all sorts of fun stuff, guys. It's the Surprise Jab Podcast. We're coming at you with surprises every single week. Lock in, get loaded. Let's get it. I mean, first off, we always talk about new UFC news, new UFC fights. Nothing really confirmed. The Dana White's Contender Series was actually the other night. I was able to catch some of the fights. This one guy, I can't remember his name exactly, Russian dude, former kickboxer, who actually beat Alex Pereira in kickboxing, won in round one, got a round one knockout, and he got a contract. I think two or three other people also got contracts. One dude had a very nasty KO. Pretty decent episode. The season finale of, what is this, season 8 now? I believe it is. Goes down next weekend. Maybe we'll check it out. Maybe we'll drop our predictions. We'll have to see. Other than that, no new UFC fights. Dana White has not been blessing us. He did say the UFC 310 card is complete, and he can't wait to announce it. UFC 310, of course, going down November. What are they trying to do? 7th? I think it's December 7th. So we are less than 2 months away, and we don't know what it is. I'll be very curious to see what he reveals it to be. I think it'll be Bilal Muhammad versus Shavkat Rakhmonov, and there's also a very slim chance it might be Alexander Pantoa versus Japanese star coming over from one championship, or maybe it was Rizin, that is Kai Asakura. We'll have to see what Dana White goes with. But one thing we can talk about is the updated UFC rankings. UFC rankings did update after UFC 307. So let's take a look at some of the bigger changes. First off, the women's bantamweight division. Julia Pena is your new champion. Hakuel Pennington moves down to 1. Kayla Harrison, after her win over Ketlin Vieira, moves from 3 to 2. Ketlin moves down to 3. Mauro Bueno Silva now moves up to 6, tied with Irene Aldana for 6. What's next for all these women? Look, Juliana Pena, she's fighting Kayla Harrison. That's what you're going to do right there. I'm going to match up Ketlin Vieira, Hakuel Pennington, Macy Chison, and Norma Dumont. That's your 1, 3, 4, and 5 women. They can all fight each other in some kind of, I don't even know how you want to view it. And then Mara Bueno Silva, I think her versus Norma Dumont will be a firefight. You can also do Mara Bueno Silva versus Irene Aldana, Carol Rosa. A lot of options there. Women's bantamweight, I think, is in a much better position with Julia Pena as champion. I'll be interested to see what transpires in that division. Women's strawweight, the next division we'll be looking at, as with her win over Marina Rodriguez, Yasmin Lucindo moves up 6 spots to the number 8 spot in the rankings. Amanda Ribas moves up to 7. Mackenzie Dern up to 6 as Marina Rodriguez drops 3 spots down to 9. Also, Tisha Pennington joins the rankings at 15, booting goodness knows who. I also can't remember who used to be in the rankings. But as for matchmaking, all these women look, Tisha Pennington got a win over Carlos Barza. I didn't even think she won. She's 36 years old. She's not going to do much, okay? But as for Yasmin Lucindo, she's ranked 8. I think anyone above her, you know, Amanda Ribas, Mackenzie Dern, Amanda Lemos, Jessica Andrade, a lot of options there for you. As for Marina, I'm going to give her to Lupi Godinez at 11 or even Angela Hill at 12. I think those would be great matchups there to kind of rebound for Marina. And as for Yasmin, fight anyone ranked above her. By the way, 22 years old, ranked number 8 in the UFC strawweight division. Incredible. You have some big matchups coming up as the number 1 ranked Tatiana Suarez takes on the number 3 ranked Virna Jandiroba. And the number 2 ranked Jan Chayonin takes on the number 10 ranked Tabitha Ritchie. Still waiting for news on Jessica Andrade. When is she going to fight next? Women's pound-for-pound rankings is where we'll check out next as Julia Pena, who's already ranked number 5 in the world, moves from 5 to 4. She's now the number 4 pound-for-pound woman in the world behind Alexa Grasso, Zhang Weili, and Valentina Shevchenko. I would put her above Alexa Grasso. I mean, Alexa Grasso was good, but at the same time, we should have our 3 champions. There's only 3 women in the whole division. They should be the champions. Kayla Harrison moves up 2 spots from 11 to 9. I like her there. Look, I'd probably put her above everyone, honestly. I think she probably could be any woman in a MMA matchup, just in my humble opinion. As for her, she'll be getting a title shot next year sometime. Jessica Andrade gets booted down from 13 to 14. I don't know what that's all about, but other than that, the women's bantamweight rankings is way more screwy than the men's, and the men's is super screwy. So that's all we got for the women. Men's division, Roman Dolidze in the middleweight division, following his win over Kevin Holland, be it even if it was by TKO due to injury, moves up from 10 to 9. He's now tied with Paulo Costa for the number 9 spot. Look, Dolidze ranked number 9. Number 8, Brendan Allen, just lost to Nazarene Imavov, who is ranked number 4. So I think you could do Allen versus Dolidze. That just screams Apex Fight Night. Could also do Jerry Cannonier versus Roman Dolidze. Great matchup there. I'm pretty sure they're going to do Marvin Vettori, actually, versus Brendan Allen. That might be the move. But Dolidze is not going to move up too high. I think Jerry Cannonier, slimmest chance he maybe fights down against the winner of Michelle Pereira and Anthony Hernandez. We'll have to see, but, you know, doesn't have too much momentum behind him. He's beaten, so far, he's lost to Marvin Vettori last year. He lost to Nazarene Imavov this year. By the way, got all truck in both those. Beats Anthony Smith at light heavyweight, then beats a welterweight in Kevin Holland at middleweight by injury TKO. Super random. Don't really know what to do there. Welterweight division, we have some changes. Sean Brady moves from 6 to 5, passing Colby Covington. Sean Brady, I don't think, has a fight lined up. He did just beat Gilbert Burns, but he's now ranked number 5. Colby at 6 makes me think he may be fighting down. If I could match make everyone, okay, Kamaru Usman at 2. I don't necessarily see him fighting at welterweight, but for sake of actually helping me make matchups, we're going to give Shavkat Rakhmonov the title shot. Leon Edwards versus Ian Garry at 7, so number 1 and 7. Usman can take on Jack Della Maddalena or Sean Brady. I'm going to go Jack Della Maddalena. Sean Brady can take on Colby Covington, who he is now ranked above. I think that's what you do there. Joaquin Buckley also moving up 2 spots with his win over Wonderboy Thompson, who drops 2 spots. Wonderboy is now at 11. Joaquin Buckley at 9. Joaquin Buckley, I mean, honestly, him versus Gilbert Burns makes complete sense. You could also do him versus Colby Covington. Welterweight has this crazy issue now. In the top 10, you now have 5 guys who are newcomers, and you have 5 guys who are on their way out. Those being Leon Edwards, Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington, Gilbert Burns, and Jeff Neal, if Jeff Neal even counts. He's fighting a lightweight in Rafael Dos Anjos. How is that even a logical matchup there? But the new guys, Shavkat Rakhmonov, getting a title shot, Jack Della Maddalena, 19-fight win streak, I believe, since losing his first 2 MMA fights. Sean Brady, whose only career loss is to the champion, Bilal Muhammad. Ian Garry, who's undefeated, and Joaquin Buckley, who just knocked out Wonderboy Thompson. I'm excited for the state of the men's welterweight division. As for Wonderboy, you know, I don't think he's going to retire. I don't know if they're going to do the Michael Page fight. He's ranked 13. But as of right now, you know, you got Michael Morales. He's just going to be fighting up-and-comers. Wonderboy really needs to assess what he's going to do. Moving to lightweight, Max Holloway jumps 2 spots from 10 to 8. They're definitely going to try and beef him up as we move towards him and Ilia Topuria's featherweight championship fight at UFC 308, October 26th in Abu Dhabi. Super pumped for that. Matheus Gamrot moves to 9, Rafael Fiziev to 10. Still waiting for fight news for both of them. But Holloway, they want to make him sound as good as possible, and being ranked number 8 compared to 10 looks pretty dang good. No changes at featherweight as we look at the final changes in the men's bantamweight division. By the way, no changes with Khalil Roundtree Jr., who I think should be ranked number 5 in the world at men's light heavyweight. Apparently not. And I think Alex Pereira should be the pound-for-pound best fighter on the planet. He remains the number 2 pound-for-pound behind Islam Makhachev. But as for bantamweight, Marlon Vera passes Henry Cejudo from 6 to 7, which makes me think they're gearing up Marlon Vera for a fight coming up. Same for Cejudo. And Mauro Bautista jumps 2 spots with his win over Jose Aldo. I think you do Mauro Bautista versus Marlon Vera next. I think that's a perfect fight. As for Jose Aldo, I mean, what about Henry Cejudo? Perfectly right there. Everyone who moved around, they can all fight each other. Look at that. Zachary to the rescue, perfectly knowing what to do with the rankings. I don't really know. We'll have to see what transpires for the rest of the year and into 2025 as we see what new changes will come. But that's all your new UFC news. Pretty much just the rankings. Nothing else has really transpired. But I'll tell you something that has transpired, and that is I have started a new show. That's right. I was looking for something to watch on Amazon Prime. I'm like, what should I watch? What should I watch? What should I watch? And I come across Reach Reacher. Okay, Reacher starring, I have to, Alan Ritchson. That's his name. Absolutely love it. Alan Ritchson, who played Thad Castle in Blue Mountain State. Hilarious TV show. And I was like, oh my gosh, all my boys, or a couple of them that I know, were telling me I should watch this. And I give it a shot, and season one was spectacular. I kind of started season two. I wasn't really like completely in watch TV mode, so I kind of stopped watching it so I could watch it later. But I watched season one. I kind of just wanted to give some quick thoughts on that. So Reacher, this is the synopsis for it. An American action crime television series developed by Nick Santora for Amazon Prime Video is based on the Jack Reacher book series by Lee Child. It stars Alan Ritchson as the title character, a self-proclaimed hobo and former U.S. Army military policeman with formidable strength, intellect, and abilities. During his travels, Reacher crosses paths with dangerous criminals and battles them. It is so good. The first season is based on The Killing Floor, which was Lee Child's 1997 debut album and came out in 2022. The second season, based on a book, came out in December of 2023 and concluded on January of 2024. And it was revealed that third season had begun based on the third novel. And I'm actually excited because we might bring this up again when we talk about top 10 things in pop culture, because I think I got a notification today. But season three won't be coming out till 2025. They've already renewed it for season four. I'm pumped. This show is so freaking good. I wonder if I can, in season one, here's what it is. While visiting the fictional rural town of Margrave, Georgia, Reacher is arrested for murder. After he is freed, he teams up with two honest police officers, Oscar Finley and Roscoe Conklin, his love interest, to investigate a local conspiracy involving corrupt lawmen, politicians, and a wealthy business tycoon and his son. It is so good. It is so good. And one thing that I think is really good with this is they nail the comedy. They nail all the little things you miss here and there. Every episode ends with you wanting to watch the next one. They're very watchable. All under an hour. Some are 40 minutes. Some are 55. They flow between that range, which I think is perfect. The season concludes in a perfect way. Everything feels fulfilled. And the fact we get to see, I'm going to start watching season two. Season three is going to be on the way. And season four, probably in 2026 or 2027. Excited for all of that. It is honestly probably my top 10 TV shows as of right now. You know, my list is always fluctuating. 8 episodes per season. Some cool characters from, actually, you know, one interesting aspect they do, is what I was going to say, because I was looking at one of the actors' name is Maxwell. He plays young Jack Reacher. Is they give flashbacks in season one to Jack Reacher as a kid, which kind of lets you know where his ethics come from. He has a big brother, and that's a huge storyline in the show, is basically him like learning from his brother as a kid. And it is just fantastic. It is a great show. I highly recommend it. I don't really want to give away any spoilers. I don't really want to do that. I want to you guys to go and watch it and then come tell me, hey, this is what I think about this. But yeah, super good. Reacher gets a 10 out of 10 for me. And I really give out 10 out of 10s. That's how much I've enjoyed this show. So when I'm giving out 10 out of 10s, you should know. You should go watch this. Alan Ritchson, I would love to meet you. But as I was mentioning, top 10 things in pop culture. You already know. We got to do it. You just already know every single time we do an episode. Top 10 new things in pop culture. Kyle Chandler at number one has now officially signed on to play Hal Jordan in the Lantern series. I don't know who Hal Jordan is. I do not know who Hal Jordan is. How about we look him up? Hal Jordan, what is that, the DCEU? I honestly cannot remember. Actually, literally the first thing you get is that Hal Jordan is being cast. Is Hal Jordan the main character? I think he might be. I think he might be Green Lantern. I know there's multiple Green Lanterns, but Kyle Chandler, super good. The show you might recognize him from is Godzilla King of the Monsters. He plays one of the main characters there, and he's been in so many different shows, so many series. He's a lovely actor. I'm actually very happy with this casting. I might check this out, actually. Lantern, the whole premise of Green Lantern is super weird to me, where it's like you get a ring, and you have superpowers, and you can, like, anything you think in your mind, you can bring into reality. It's actually kind of a cool premise. Number two, Terrifier 3 is tracking to potentially beat Joker 2 at the domestic box office this weekend. Terrifier 3, of course, a low-budget, crappy horror film. Joker 2, this blockbuster, which cost hundreds of millions of dollars to make. Unreal. Absolutely unreal that we got to this point. Number three, the Abbott Elementary and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia crossover will take place in episode 9 of Abbott Elementary. No freaking shot. I see clips of Abbott Elementary and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia all the time. all the time on TikTok, on Instagram Reels. They look like two funny shows. They actually look like hilarious shows. I believe It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. What is that on? Is that on Hulu or HBO Max or something? Abbott Elementary, that's on CBS or like NBC or something. That is on a regular TV program. So the fact they're doing a crossover is really interesting to me. Number three, Andrew Garfield says that Tobey Maguire is his favorite Spider-Man, but I also love Tom. What do you know, Andrew? Everyone loves Tobey Maguire, but Andrew Garfield, a slept on, a very, very slept on Spider-Man. I personally enjoy all of them. They're all honestly all my favorite Spider-Man. They all play it so well. Oh, there we go. At number four, Reacher has already been renewed for season four. Season three releases in 2025. So weird that I just started watching this and they're dropping news about this. This always happens when I start watching a show. I swear. It's always weird, too. Like, I come across this show and then all of a sudden, hey, we're getting news about a new series or it being canceled. It's always a new series or it's being canceled. Nothing in between. Number five, Christopher Nolan's next movie will release on July 17th, 2026 in theaters. Matt Damon is in talks to star. Universal Pictures will distribute the film in IMAX. Filming begins in early 2025. No other news about it. But Christopher Nolan, he creates very complex films. And after what he did with, what's it been called, Oppenheimer, you know, he kind of went for more of a biopic, kind of like a actual realistic story. I feel like he's going to go back to his time travel manipulation of time. That's how he does things. Number six, top 10 best horror movies of all time, according to Variety. Number one is Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974. How about that? The Exorcist at 1973, Jaws at four, Night of the Living Dead, 1968, Frankenstein, 1931. They're just going for nostalgia here. I don't honestly trust that list. Number six, A Quiet Place game will include an optional microphone feature that will allow the creatures to pick up on any IRL noise made by the player. Releasing next week on consoles and PC. Well, what happens with me? I'm sneezing. My nose is always getting stuffy, if you can't tell. Am I just going to get attacked by the monsters all the time if I play that? That's kind of ridiculous. Number seven, the first five A Nightmare on Elm Street films are now streaming on Max. Freddy Krueger, big villain. Ugh, no interest in that. I have no interest in that at all. Number seven, Matt Reeves. New films from major directors releasing in 2026. Matt Reeves in October. That's The Batman 2. Jordan Peele in October 23. I think the movie he's making is called Him. I love all Jordan Peele movies. They're all super good. I still have to watch Us. I've watched Nope, and I've watched Get Out. Those are both amazing. Mike Flanagan, March 13th. I recognize his name, but I can't put a face to it. Dennis Villeneuve, December 18th. I believe that's Dune. Actually, where's Mike Flanagan? Is this a picture of Mike Flanagan? No, that's Jordan Peele. Steven Spielberg, May 15th. That's a UFO film. And then Christopher Nolan, July 17th, like we just mentioned. So 2026, getting some good films. But we still got to get through 2025. Movies releasing in summer 2026 at 8. Shrek 5, yes. Sign me up for a little Shrek 5. Supergirl, absolutely not. Toy Story 5, why are we still making these? Moana live action. Dwayne The Rock Johnson as himself with superpowers. Avengers Doomsday, you betcha I'm in. The Mandalorian and Grogu, it's tough to take a Disney Plus series and then convince me I should go to the movies and watch it. I don't know what a movie could give me that a TV series couldn't. I don't really know. But those are all great movies, actually. I'm excited for those. After Puss in Boots: The Last Wish, one of the top 10 animated movies of all time. And it teased Shrek at the end. I absolutely love that. What are we at? Number nine, a live-action Shinobi film is in the works. Sam Hargraves will direct. I have no idea what Shinobi is, but sounds like Kenobi. So I'm very interested. Number 10, to round this out, Jenna Fisher, who played Pam on The Office, says she was diagnosed with breast cancer, but she says she is now cancer-free after completing 12 rounds of weekly chemotherapy, 3 weeks of radiation and surgery. Get your annual mammogram, she said. You can also ask your doctor to calculate your breast cancer risk assessment score. Well, Pam, Jenna Fisher, I am more than overjoyed to hear that you are cancer-free. That just warms my heart. But guys, that's all we got for pop culture. Lots of stuff always going around in the movie, TV show realm. Very happy that Jenna Fisher is doing all right. I'll tell you what else is all right, ladies and gentlemen, and that is fantasy football. Here on the channel, we are fantasy football lovers, and something fun I elected to do for this fantasy football season, which I didn't do last season, was to track who the top 10 players, even defenses, kickers, tight ends, wide receivers were for every fantasy position week by week. I'm thinking I maybe start doing a like noting like who's dropping up and down week by week. That's kind of its own project I might do if I have just a ridiculously large amount of free time, which I oddly do yet don't at the same time. It's very complicated, my free time situation. I don't even know how to explain that. But as we are going into week 6 of the NFL, we do have our week 5 rankings official. So we're going to check these out, talk about if there's any surprises or anything that just is just unexpected and things that were expected. So without a doubt, let's get right on into it, guys, with our quarterbacks current ranking after 5 weeks of the NFL season. Mind you, some guys dropped due to them being on buys, but as for the quarterback position, Lamar Jackson coming in off of his massive week, he is your number one fantasy QB, no surprise. Absolutely no surprise. Jaden Daniels at 2. Like we mentioned last week, they're talking about voting this guy MVP. Rookie of the year is being ran away with by Jaden Daniels. He's taken a Commanders team which had the worst defense in the league, an offense that only managed 5 wins. They've started out 4-1 to start the season. He's the number 2 fantasy QB. He does it all. Dude, he should have been the number 1 pick. Number 3, Baker Mayfield, still getting it done, dude. He is a complete career resurgence this year with the Buccaneers. I love to see it. At number 4, Joe Burrow, back where he should be. You know, he had a massive last 2 weeks, back to a spot where a lot of people just, I don't really think anyone thought he was going to be a fantasy monster, but seeing him at 4 or 5 weeks in gives me hope. Now, the Bengals, we're going to get to our predictions right after this. We're going to talk about their record, but it is not looking too pretty. We'll be talking about them in a second. But I think they have they do not have a bye week. Okay, Joe Burrow, maybe next week you'll get a little bye week. And number 5, Josh Allen. Dude, Josh Allen, hit or miss. He's either dropping 30 or sub 10. Josh Allen really needs this Bills team. I don't know what to make of them. Number 6, Geno Smith. Bit of a surpriser. Geno Smith oddly just racks up fantasy points. It's kind of hilarious that he's just number 6 on here. I enjoy it. And number 7, Kyler Murray. He screams fantasy QB. Good spot there. Justin Fields at 8. I do remember him being 6 last week, so he did drop a bit. Cowboys defense stepped up big, which brings up to number 9, Dak Prescott, who's been taking a bit of a dive. Another guy who, you know, he's either dropping a lot or dropping a mid-range amount. And Sam Darnold, who at one point was the number 2 fantasy QB, is now at 10. He continues to kind of drop off here and there. Luckily, the Vikings defense is unreal. At running back, Alvin Kamara keeps his spot despite having a bit of an off week when the Saints played the Chiefs. Kamara, still savage, and I still can't believe that it is 2024 and Alvin Kamara is your top fantasy running back. Five weeks in, amazing stuff from the Saints RB. Derrick Henry at 2, yet another guy who, you know, he's almost at year 10, I believe, of his NFL tenure. Still kicking butt. He had a massive run last week to set up the Ravens for a game-winning field goal. Fantasy monster. He's been playing great. Saquon Barkley, all right, missed this last week due to a Eagles bye week. Still the number 3 running back. Kyren Williams at 4. There's something about Kyren Williams at 4 that just makes sense to me. Amazing running back for the Rams. Jordan Mason, who I found out is not a rookie. He's a 3rd-year running back for the 49ers. Filling in for the injured Christian McCaffrey. Still at 5, doing well. James Cook at 6. Amazing stuff there for the Bills. Chuba Hubbard at 7. Oh my goodness, the fact Chuba Hubbard is having a breakout year warms my heart. This Panthers team is atrocious. It's good to know that Chuba Hubbard is not. Aaron Jones at 8 for the Vikings. He did get hurt. I think his numbers might dip off a bit, but still happy to have a top 10 fantasy QB, not QB, running back on my NFL favorite NFL team. Brian Robinson Jr. at 9 for the Commanders. He's balling out as well. I think Jaden Daniels brings out the best in Brian Robinson Jr. And number 10, James Conner, the Cardinals running back. Always is just kind of middle of the pack. Finishing at 10 right now, not too bad. Going to wide receiver, Ja'Marr Chase at 1, baby. Ja'Marr Chase at 1. He has reclaimed his spot after a massive 41.33-point fantasy week. I absolutely went off. He's doing great so far. Him and Joe Burrow, the connection's there. Number 2, Nico Collins. He's going on IR, so this will be the last you see of Nico Collins at the number 2 spot. As for right now, it is kind of tragic to see. Luckily, they have Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell to back him up. And number 3, Justin Jefferson on a bye week. All right, on a bye week this week. So he is going to be dropping out of the top 3. But JJ, even with Sam Darnold behind the helm, doing amazing. Malik Nabers at 4. I believe he missed this past week, but still had so many fantasy points so far through the first 5 weeks. He's your number 4 fantasy wide receiver. Jaden Reed at 5. Hey, Jordan Love, he has a favorite target. Jaden Reed on the Packers. Chris Godwin, you know, he used to be number one, actually, I think 2 weeks ago. Buccaneers kind of dropping back. Mike Evans getting more involved. He was at 6. Drake London moving up to 7. Kirk Cousins was loving him in that Thursday night masterclass. Stephon Diggs at 8. You know, it's great, crazy that two Texans are up here. CJ Stroud doing amazing with them. He's probably breaking into the top 10 soon. And at number 9, my favorite wide receiver of the league, Brian Thomas Jr., from Jacksonville. Dude, I cannot believe I drafted this guy. He's went from bottom of the barrel to the number 9 fantasy wide receiver in the league. He is absolutely having a rookie year for the ages. Love this guy. And at number 10, Mike Evans. No shocker there. I mean, Mike Evans, every year he gets 1,000 yards. It's just what he does with the Bucks. Going to tight end, I mean, number 1. I love this guy. Brock Bowers, rookie from Georgia on the Raiders. 23 fantasy points this past weekend. Yeah, he's this year's Sam Laporta. Number 2, George Kittle, no surprise there. Number 3, Tucker Kraft. That's right. Tucker Kraft, I just want to reinstate this, is now the number 3 fantasy tight end. Last week, Tucker Kraft wasn't even in the top 15. That's what a big game will do for you. He dropped 25 fantasy points. Packers, good for you. Dallas Goedert at 4. Eagles did have a bye week. Used to be number 1, so dropping down to 4, not too bad. Isaiah Likely, I mean, absolutely crazy that Isaiah Likely, who is technically the tight end 2, is still hanging at 5. He'll occasionally just drop 25 points, catch 2 touchdowns, then go back to only catching 2 balls a game. Pretty funny. Cole Kmet at 6. He's going to be middle of the pack the entire year. Friermuth, my bad, at 7 for the Steelers. You're going to see his name in that 4 to 7 range, 8 range the whole year. Travis Kelce, welcome back to the top 10. Finally, Travis Kelce had a big game in front of his love, Taylor Swift. He went off and he actually propelled me. I don't even think that's the word. He led me to victory in my sleeper fantasy league. Is it propelled? I don't know what word I'm searching for. But Kelce in the top 10 for fantasy. Jake Ferguson at 9 for the Cowboys. He was doing okay. Trey McBride at 10. It was supposed to be a top 3 fantasy QB. Kyler Murray and him still trying to work out the kinks. Defensive-wise, I mean, come on. Come on, ladies and gentlemen, the Vikings defense, the best defense in the league. Brian Flores, you are a beautiful human being. Broncos at 2. Okay, don't sleep on the Broncos. And we may actually be picking the Broncos again this week. They're red hot right now. Bo Nix actually getting a little backup with that defense. Bears at 3. I mean, they did 5 Chicago Bears. How about the 2025 Chicago Bears? Huh? What about that? Packers at 4. What can I say? Top 4 defenses in the league, and 3 of them are from the NFC North. We're taking over this game. 49ers at 5, as they should be. Jets at 6, as they should be. Steelers at 7, as they should be. Giants at 8. Very surprising. This defense unit has been leading this team when they struggle at times by Daniel Jones. Very good to see that for the Giants defense. Chargers at 9. I think they had a bye week, actually, so they kind of fell off a bit. Seahawks and Bills tied at 10. Always interested to see. I should actually start doing the bottom 10 for defenses, too. I'm always curious to see what defenses are the worst. Kicker-wise, not to make changes. Brandon Aubrey at 1. Best kicker in the league for the Cowboys. Kai Fairbairn at 2 from the Texans. Trying to catch up to Brandon Aubrey points-wise. Jake Moody for the 49ers at 3. Actually got hurt. Mitch Wisnowski was stepping in. I don't know if he will be in for week number 6. Young Hoku at 4 has been an absolute dog for the Falcons this year. Chris Boswell for the Steelers, reliable. Caleb McLaughlin for the Bucks, reliable. Austin Siebert having an amazing year with the Commanders. He's at 7 currently. Will Reichard, of course, your Minnesota Vikings kicker, now at 8. Good job, Will. And Will Lutz, number 9. I believe he's on the Saints. Oh, that's Blake Grupp. I don't even know. Will Lutz is on the Broncos, I think it is. And Harrison Butker, who all the feminist ladies hate, is at number 10 from the Kansas City Chiefs. A lot of fun stuff here, guys. A lot of fun stuff. I'm just having a fun time. Every Tuesday I do this, I always have a little blast. I'm always like, ooh, who moved up? Who moved down? It's so fun to go through all of this, and I'm excited to do it the rest of the year. And something else we're going to be doing the rest of the year is, of course, our weekly NFL predictions. Only 14 games this week. Thank you. I don't have time to go through all 16. Doesn't actually affect me that much. But let's get into it. Drop our week six predictions. I'm getting all amped up. Let's get right on into it. Kicking us off on, of course, Thursday Night Football, the 49ers visit the Seahawks. I am very curious to see how these two teams perform. I am very curious to see how these two teams perform. Little NFC West matchup for you. You know, the Seahawks currently lead 3-2 in the division, but they're on a two-game losing streak. I don't know what's gone on. You know, they had absolute barn burner with the Lions before throwing that pick six or whatever it was to end the game. I can't even remember. And the Giants, their defense just dominated them. Giants defense was on point. So the Seahawks, they are at home, and they're hosting a 49ers team who is also in a bit of a pickle. This 49ers team is also in a bit of a pickle. 2-3 to start the year is just not what people pictured. They've had shocking losses to the Vikings, to the Rams, and most recently the Cardinals, all of them within one score. Now, they will be on the road for this matchup. 49ers 0-2 on the road to start off the year. This is a divisional matchup. There's no real key injuries here. I'm going to go with the 49ers. There's just some of the away teams on Thursday Night Football that I just absolutely adore. There's just something about them. Actually, I should double check. Actually, if I actually look at the games, how have home and away teams done so far? Falcons at home won. Giants on the road. Cowboys on the road won. Jets at home won. Bills on the road won. There's actually a pattern. But since week one, it is flip-flopped, home and away, winning on Thursday Night Football. That's right, I have identified a pattern here, guys, and this does calculate a 49ers win. I also have, I do want to root for Jaxon Smith-Njigba and Kenneth Walker, but I also do have Deebo Samuel, who I do need to be rooting for. I might actually start Brock Purdy this week in Sleeper Fantasy League. I don't know, there's something about this 49ers team. I think they can get back on track. They're pretty talented. 49ers over the Seahawks. Look, you can expect in a majority of divisional games for teams to split. It's not rare for a divisional matchup where a road team beats a home team. That's not really a shocker. 49ers over Seahawks, lock it in. Kicking us off Sunday morning, 8:30, bright and early, the Jaguars and the Bills. No, I meant to write the Bears, I think it was, are in London, England. Jaguars, a notable team in London. I swear they're always there. I honestly swear the Jaguars are always in London, but are they as successful as the Minnesota Vikings? Absolutely not. I don't think so. But, like, you know, the Bears, this technically is a home game for them. So it's kind of screwy. Bears technically 3-0 at home, 0-2 on the road. This is technically away. You know, this is a weird scenario. Bears, like I said, number three defense in the league. They're on the road, yet it counts as a home game. Don't really know how to describe that. Jaguars picked up their first win of the year last week at home. I don't know. There's just something about London, which really just screams Jaguars to me. But this Bears defense, are they really going to let Trevor Lawrence dot them up? I just don't really see that. I think one main issue for me is I have the Bears defense in a lot of leagues, but I also have a big Brian Thomas Jr. fan, a big Travis Etienne fan. So my picks should really align with my fantasy football predictions. You know, I think that makes sense. No? But an interesting point I did want to bring up, which is kind of why I'm going with this prediction. I also just kind of think that it'd be funny if the Jaguars only can win in London, like, the whole season. Like, I understand they already won at home, but it would be funny if, like, they only get, like, three wins all year and two of them were in London. Because what I just learned is that they actually are staying in London for their Week 7 game with the Bengals. So the Jaguars team is in London for over 2 weeks. Pretty incredible. Fun fact, they'll be playing at, I believe it's Tottenham. Actually, it might be Wembley. I think they play at Tottenham and Wembley Stadium. And the Jaguars are actually undefeated at one of those, but are 4-5 at the other. And the one that they're undefeated in, they play against the Bears. So we are going to go with the Jags. Trevor Lawrence is actually 3-1 in London. So yeah, that's what we're going to go with. Bears, I just don't think you're meant for London. I think this is where the Jaguars will succeed. So yeah. Jaguars over the Bears in London, lock it in. After that, we're back in the States for our last 12 games, 11 of which are on Sunday. Texans and Patriots will get us kicked off. And look, Texans 4-1 off to a stupendous start. Only loss to the undefeated Minnesota Vikings. As for the Patriots, not the hottest start, 1-4, four-game losing streak. They are starting Drake May, though, hoping to switch things up. So maybe they'll do pretty good, but I don't think so. Texans, look, their defense is projected a lot of points. They're the top free agency defense on every ESPN Fantasy League that I've seen. And look, two-game win streak, 3-0 at home. I just, you know, 1-1 on the road, though. So they do have that, but Pats are 0-2 at home. Okay, and Drake May switching up. I don't know if he has that connection yet with the wide receivers. I don't know if Ramondre Stevenson can put the team on his back. We're going with the Texans on the road. After that, Commanders visit the Ravens. You got to be kidding me. You can't even script this. Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels, and it's only week number 6. I am so interested in this matchup. Ravens have jumped out to a 3-game win streak after starting 0-2, 147 points on the season. They are the top offense in the AFC. And you may be asking, what's the top defense? What's the top offense in the NFC? The Commanders, 155 points. This is going to be a masterclass. This is going to be a masterclass, ladies and gentlemen. Commanders, 2-1 on the road. Ravens, 1-1 at home. Who will go which way? I do have to give this one to the Ravens. This kind of reminds me of a passing of the torch moment where it's just not quite the moment where the torch will patch from Lamar. The torch will pass. Thank you. Like Olympic style passing the torch down to the next top guy when it comes to the top QB in the league. I just don't think Lamar Jackson is ready to give that title up yet to Jaden Daniels. I also just think the way the Ravens have been finishing all their games, they are a team that can pull it out when it matters most. Commanders, still kind of a younger team with Jaden Daniels and Brandon Robinson Jr. Ravens over the Commanders. That's my thought. Moving from Baltimore over to Philadelphia, Eagles are back off of their bye, and they get a Browns team, which is just, oh man, Deshaun Watson, I hope he's not even the starting quarterback. Put Jameis Winston in, for goodness sakes, I should better say. 1-4, Browns are on a 3-game losing streak. Offense has only put up 79 points this whole season. Oh my gosh, one of the worst offenses in the league. And the defense, here's one of the issues. The Browns have an amazing defense, one of the best defenses in the league. They can only do so much when they're on the field the whole freaking game. That's for the Eagles, you know, 2-2. They did have an early bye, 86 points for... The Eagles have more points than the freaking Browns, and they played one less game. That should tell you something. 86-96, so the negative point differential, but that's not too bad. Look, Eagles all day in this one. I got Devontae Smith. I'm probably going to start Jalen Hurts over Love, if I'm being honest. And I got Saquon Barkley. I have no Browns players. I don't plan to pick up any Browns players. Look, they need to get rid of Deshaun Watson. Put Jameis Winston in. That's my thoughts there. After that, Cardinals visit the Packers. I'm actually pretty intrigued by this matchup. Packers 3-2, bottom of the NFC North. That's how freaking good we are. Packers are 1-1 at home, courtesy of the Minnesota Vikings, that is. Thank you very much. Thank you. Round of applause, actually. Oh, I should have brought the soundboard out. That would have been a perfect sound opportunity. We'll have to get that back next week. As for the Cardinals, you know, second in the AFC West, I think Kyler Murray has just needed to make adjustments so far. They picked up a big win over the 49ers last week. 2-3 to start the season. Isn't that bad. -9 point differential. 120 points put up, 129 given up, so that's kind of a doozy. But Packers, Cardinals always give us great matchups. I don't know the history here, but I don't know. There's just something about this game. Something's telling me Cardinals. Something's speaking to me about the Cardinals, but I'll tell you what. I don't know. I just feel like I'm going to pick the Packers. That way, either the Packers lose and I get it wrong, or they win and I get it right. So that way it's a win-win, because honestly, I don't really care for the Packers. I'm a Vikings fan. After that, Buccaneers-Saints, a little NFC South divisional matchup right there for you. Buccaneers 3-2, are second technically in the NFC South. Tiebreaker goes to the Falcons. Saints 2-3 after starting out 2-0, looking like they were the top team in the league. 3-game losing streak, which has just been atrocious. However, 140 points. 496 against one of the best point differentials in the league. Doesn't even make sense if you ask me. Derek Carr is out. They got Lanier in. He's not going to carry them to victory. This is a Buccaneers win all day. And Bucks, all right, don't hold that Falcons win against them. This team is dangerous. This team is feisty. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, they're getting it done from Baker Mayfield. And Bucky Irving, Rashad White, they're always dangerous. They're kind of mediocre, though. Rashad White, one of my biggest letdowns for the year. Honestly, that actually kind of pisses me off. But yeah, Saints, I'm sorry. I don't see Lanier being able to get it done with you. Colts visit the Titans for our next matchup. Is that 3:30? What's our first 3:30 game? First 3:30 game is the Chargers and the Broncos. So our final noon game, Colts and the Titans, another divisional matchup. Oh my goodness, this time the AFC South. Colts 2-3 to start out the year. Titans 1-3. Titans did get a bye week. Okay, Titans did get a bye week. I have a sneaking suspicion Will Levis is getting benched. I have a sneaking suspicion that Will Levis might be getting benched. Mason Rudolph played the last game because Will got hurt, I believe. But I just do not see them running with him again. And by the way, Tajay Spears-Tony Pollard is a dirty, dirty backfield for this Titans team. Colts 2-3. Joe Flacco, Anthony Richardson. I really think it depends who's in. This Colts team is super talented. Michael Pittman is out this week. I think that's going to play a factor in me giving this one to the Titans to pick up their second win of the season. I like this team coming out of the bye week and getting a victory. That's what I like. Titans over the Colts. We're going to go with it. I am, though, trying to pull off a trade for Anthony Richardson, which may involve some other players. I'll have to keep you updated on that. Moving from noon to 3:30, Chargers coming off their bye, another divisional matchup, AFC West. Sometimes I forget my divisions, apparently. As the Chargers visit the Broncos, fun matchup here. Broncos 3-2, three-game win streak, take on the Chargers, who are 2-2 on a two-game losing streak, despite having a plus 18-point differential. Very good stuff there. Broncos on the run of a lifetime. I don't even know how they've done it. Out of nowhere, you know, beat the Buccaneers. Beat the Jets, beat the Raiders, all right? And I think this team is going to wind up 4-2, and you're going to go, how in the hell are the Broncos 4-2 behind Bo Nix? That's just because they got the magic. They're 1-1 at home. I think they pick up another one here. And it's nothing against this Chargers team, okay? Chargers team, they've been doing pretty good. And unlike the Titans, you know, I would really love to go with the Chargers here. There's just something about this Broncos. You know, they're just the team where they're going to be 4-2, and you're going to be like, how in the hell are the Broncos 4-2? Broncos over the Chargers. I just, you know, Quentin Johnson, Ladd McConkey, it's not going to do it for me. It's not going to do it for me. Herbert needs more weapons. Dobbins and Gus Edwards cannot carry the backfield. You want to know why they were good in Baltimore? That's because they had Lamar with them. All right, that's the reason right there for you. Broncos over Chargers, that's my prediction. Steelers and Raiders, I mean, holy freaking cow, another AFC matchup for you. Raiders 2-3, no Devontae Adams. Gardner Minshew is failing. Brock Bowers is the only good part of this team. Running back room is trash. Holy cow, they're in rough shape. And Steelers, two-game losing streak. Mind you, those have been close games to the Steelers and close game to the Colts. They've lost them both by three. This Pittsburgh team is completely healthy. All is good. Actually, Jalen Warren does need to come back. We're taking Steelers over the Raiders on the road. I'm not picking the Raiders until Devontae Adams is on a new team. Actually, they might even fire their head coach. I don't know what's going on with all that. After that, we get to what I thought should have been Sunday Night Football. I guess it's not worthy enough. We got the Lions and the Cowboys. Talk about a star-studded matchup right there. I mean, holy cow. Sorry, I'm out of breath for a second. I've been trying to take this in spurts, okay? I've been coughing this whole damn podcast. I don't know what's going on. I got a little cold or something, but we're fighting through this. Cowboys 3-2 on a little two-game winning streak. Notably, though, Cowboys yet to win at home after going perfect at home the year before. Very interesting. Lions coming off their bye, 3-1, two-game win streak. You already know. I'm right with the Lions in this one. Kind of divvy up my home and away picks. Plus, you know, they're 3-1. They're looking good, picking up the wins where they need to, and I need Amon-Ra St. Brown to have himself a good old time. Although the Cowboys, I am a Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, Rico Dowdle, Brandon Aubrey, Cowboys defense fan, yet I always pick against the Cowboys. Maybe if I pick against the Cowboys, they'll do well. We'll see if my reverse psychology works. And with that, we get into our final 3:30 game of the afternoon, which is the Falcons visiting the Panthers. I mean, this shouldn't be a shocker at all. It really shouldn't. 3-2, Falcons take on the 1-4 Panthers. Oh, Panthers have already given up 165 points this season. Next closest team is 145 for the Bengals. Yikes. Yeah, Falcons are red hot right now. Kirko Chains ain't slowing. After that win over the Bucks, they ain't stopping. This is an easy Falcons prediction for me. Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Darnell Mooney, Rene McLeod, Ty Allgeier, Bijan Robinson, Kirko Chains, they are all just working together. They finally have begun to gel. Don't forget about Young Huku. Panthers, besides Chuba Hubbard, that's it. You have Chuba Hubbard. And by the way, they have talent. Jonathan Mingo, Xavier Leggett, Deontay Johnson, Adam Thielen when he's healthy. They have all the weapons. They have a terrible offensive line, and they cannot get a good quarterback. I don't know what to tell you. Keep trying Andy Dalton. Try Bryce Young again. I don't know what's going to work for you guys. With that, we get into Sunday Night Football. It's very debatable if it's good Sunday Night Football. I arguably think it is not a good Sunday Night Football. But we have the Bengals visiting the Giants. Giants are not the team they used to be, but 2-3 coming off a big upset over the Seahawks. Do only have 89 points for the points against, though, ratio is minus 15, which isn't too bad. They are 0-2 at home, so searching for that first home win. They take on the Bengals, who, gosh, I feel bad for the Bengals. I truly, truly do. I do not understand how the Bengals are 1-4. They only have a minus 5 point differential. Okay, 0-3 at home, 1-1 on the road. It's been an awkward season. Okay, they kick off the year, get upset by the Pats. No one saw that coming. Okay, after that, lose to the Chiefs by 1 point, thanks to some shoddy work from the refs. Then lose to the Commanders by 5 points, beat the Panthers by 10, as they should have, and then lose to the Ravens in probably the best game of the year. Best game of the season so far is currently the Bengals and the Ravens. That game was absolutely amazing. All right, look, it's easy pick for me. It's the Bengals. This has just got to be the start of the Bengals' turnaround to make it to the wild card. It just has to be. Joe Burrow has all the weapons. All right, Zach Moss, Chase Brown, they've been performing greatly. T. Higgins, Jamar Chase, a dirty duo. Don't forget about Mike Gesicki out there. Bengals, this is your time. And to wrap up our predictions for week 6 of the NFL, we have the Bills visiting the Jets. This is always an interesting one. All right, Monday Night Football, a little divisional matchup here in the AFC East. Jets 2-3, two-game losing streak. Bills 3-2, two-game losing streak. I don't know what's been going on with either of these teams. Jets 1-1 at home, 1-2 on the road for the Bills. Bills, it's been an awkward start to the season. They kick it off, beat the Cardinals in a fantastic game, beat the Dolphins by 3 touchdowns, blow out the Jags, then get blown up by the Ravens, lose to the Texans. Ravens and Texans are both good teams. The Jets, it's even more awkward for the Jets. I don't even know what's going on in New York. They just fired Robert Saleh. They had him thrown out of the building. Clearly something personal happened. They don't want to leak to the public. But, you know, they start off the year with a big loss to the 49ers, 32-19. After that, followed up with a win over the Titans. Not that impressive. It's the Titans. Then blow out the Patriots. Looking good. Then somehow lose that Broncos game. They should have never lost that. Then that Vikings game. They really shouldn't have lost that. I don't know if this is a turning point for them. I don't really think it is. I think they're going to split with the Bills this year. But I think the Bills take this one for us right now. Which does have me sitting at 8 away teams winning, 5 home teams winning. I don't know if that's good, but those are my official predictions. 49ers, Jaguars, Texans, Ravens, Eagles, Packers, Bucks, Titans, Broncos, Steelers, Lions, Falcons, Bengals, and Bills. I think it's about time I get a freaking win here, guys. Okay, it has been terrible picks-wise. What's my current picks total? By the way, this is unofficial. Sometimes I miss my predictions on ESPN, and sometimes I don't put in the correct ones. 44-33 on the year. That is not good. That is not good at all. So let's just make sure that all our picks are officially in. We're going with the 49ers. We're going with the Jaguars. Going with the Cardinals. We're going with the Titans, Texans, Buccaneers. Yeah, your Eagles, your Ravens, your Broncos, Steelers, Lions, Falcons, Bengals, Bills. Bingo. How many total points will be scored in the Bills versus the Jets? I think it'll be 28-19, 37. I don't think that adds to 37, but those are my predictions, guys. Let me know who you guys think. It's not easy to drop predictions every single weekend, especially when I have not been red hot. But this is our bounce back week. This is where we get back into a swing of things. Week 6, I'm about to conquer you. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the finale, the final thing of the episode, the bulk, if you will, of today's episode, which is our UFC Vegas 98 picks. We are back at the apex to everyone's dismay, but we are going to try and find some positives on this card. For one positive, we have the number 1 and number 5 contenders in the men's flyweight division fighting for a title shot here as Brandon Royval takes on the undefeated Japanese star Tatsuro Taira. Got a lot of fights to talk about. Let's get hype about this card. No time to waste. Boom. Kicking off the evening, we start in the same division that we will actually end the night, which is the men's flyweight division, as we have Clayton Carpenter taking on Lucas Phenomeno Rocha. Phenomeno, I recognize that nickname, so maybe Lucas Rocha will ring a bell for familiarity, if you will. Clayton Carpenter, an undefeated 7-0. Lucas Rocha, 17-1. Oh my goodness. 5'6 and 5'3 gives Clayton 3 inches in height. 5'3, wow. Wow, he is short. 66-inch reach advantage. No, 66 inches is 64 inches for a 2-inch reach advantage for Clint Carpenter, not a 66-inch reach advantage. Orthodox stands for both of these gentlemen. Coming into this one, Clint Carpenter will be the favorite at minus 175. Lucas Rocha, the underdog, plus 145. Let's start with the undefeated Clayton Carpenter. Clayton, of course, 28 years young, from Arizona. Of his 7 victories, 2 KOs, and 3 submissions. Fun fact, so his last fight was February 18th, 2023, where he got a rear naked chokehold in 3 minutes over Juan Samalio Ronderos. No idea who that man is. But the fun fact I want to point out is in May of 2023, he was supposed to fight Steve Ursig. Steve Ursig would actually end up taking on Matt Schnell, and as we all know, the rest is history. So the fact that Clayton Carpenter pulling out of his fight with Steve Ursig led to Steve Ursig getting a title shot a year later, that is absolutely bonkers to me. But congratulations to Steve Ursig. Clayton Carpenter missed opportunity. I guess you could have beaten him. Clayton Carpenter holds a win over Edgar Chavez on Dana White's Contender Series back in 2022. So he's not fought in almost, goodness, 2 years. So it's almost 2 years. February 2025, not too far away. So almost 2 years, over a year and a half. Looking to get back into it, I mean, 5 of his 7 wins, he's gotten a finish. Not too bad. Lucas Rocha, his opponent, the underdog, 24 years young from Brazil, currently on a 6-fight winning streak. Of his 17 wins, 10 knockouts, 4 submissions. Wow, 14 of his 17 wins by finish. His one loss was by KO, but that was a couple of years ago. He won on Dana White's Contender Series last October, so finally a year later, he is making his UFC debut as he takes on Clayton Carpenter. I think I faintly remember Lucas from Dana White's Contender Series. All I know is that in that fight, he got out grappled. He got taken down 5 times in round one for controlled for 4 minutes of it and came out and got a knee knockout 18 seconds into the second round. Clayton Carpenter, on the other hand, in his debut fight in the UFC, he was taken down, but then was able to reverse it and rattle off a submission attempt. This is going to be a fairly close fight, I feel, but Lucas Rocha has a lot more experience. Clayton Carpenter hasn't fought in, I suppose, in as long as Lucas Rocha. So we're going to give this one to Lucas Rocha. By means, I'm going to say decision. You know, I always just feel when there's these fighters I haven't fought in a while, especially both of them, they're going to be a bit more hesitant, maybe not as prone to be going forward. So it's just going to lead to, I don't really want to say a stale fight, but probably a bit hesitation from both of them. We'll give it to the 24-year-old Lucas Rocha, getting the night off with a win. After that, we head up to the men's bantamweight division as Dan the Determined Argueta takes on Cody Hadda. Dan coming into this one will be the favorite. Ooh, he'll actually be the underdog, plus 155. Cody is the favorite, minus 185. Dan Argueta, 9-2 with 2 no contests. Cody Hadda, 7-1. Both men are 5'7". A 1-inch reach advantage for Cody, 69 to 68 inches. Southpaw stance with that left hand for Dan, orthodox with the right for Cody Hadda. And let's start off with Dan, who I thought was the favorite, but I guess he is the underdog at plus 155. The 31-year-old from New Mexico has 2 KOs and 4 submissions out of his 9 career victories. Of his 2 losses, he's been submitted once, which was actually his last fight in April of this year, where he was submitted with a second left in round 2, but that was to the great Gene Matsumoto, very talented up-and-coming fighter, who actually has a fight coming up, I believe. Dan, he was actually on, I don't know which Ultimate Fighter season, but he was on a past Ultimate Fighter season. Came into the UFC in 2022, lost to Damon Jackson. After that, picked up a win over Nick Aguirre. He then had 2 wins overturned against Ronnie Lawrence and Miles Johns due to tests of some regard to taking PEDs. And when he finally came back in April, he landed 9 takedowns through 2 rounds, getting 6 minutes of control time, but he was submitted with a nasty, nasty guillotine choke. Dan, man, he had a lot of hype behind him. I know a lot of people are talking about him potentially being somebody, but at 31 years old, 9-2, getting fights overturned, yeah, no. Dan Argueta hasn't won since January of 2023. His opponent, Cody Hadda, will be someone he's welcoming to the UFC. The favorite is 26 years old from Australia, currently on a 5-fight win streak. Of his 7 wins, he has 5 KOs and 2 submissions. A 100% finish rate for Cody Hadda. His 1 loss was a decision. Cody beat Billy Brand, actually, in August of this year on Dana White's Contender Series. He's got a round one rear naked chokehold. So welcome to the UFC. Absolutely love that. Cody Haddon already turning around. He just fought August 20th. I love this. You know we're going to give it to Cody Haddon, man. I always root for the Dana White's Contender Series newbies that come on because I like new faces. Dan, he's been here 3 years almost. It has not worked out so far. It is Cody Haddon's time. Plus, he's the favorite. That's who we're going to be riding with for this one. And after that, we go to the women's strawweight division as Corey Poppins McKenna, that's pretty funny, takes on Julia Psycho Pawlowski. Corey McKenna plus 125 underdog, Julia minus 150 favorite. Julia is 12-4, Corey McKenna is 8-3, 5'3-5'2 gives Corey 1 inch in height, but she is at a 5 inch reach deficit, 63 inches of 58 in favor of Julia Pawlowski. Both women fight in the orthodox fighting position. Corey McKenna, been in the UFC since 2020, where she won on Dana White's Contender Series. The 25-year-old, born in Wales, now trains in California. Of her 8 career victories, she has 2 KOs and 2 submissions. And of her 3 losses, she's been submitted once. She was actually supposed to fight Poliana Viana on this card, but Poliana unfortunately pulled out due to injury. Instead, she will face Julia Pawlowski. Corey McKenna, since 2020, I mean, she's gone 3-2 in the UFC. Most recently, she was submitted in 1:38 in March of this year by an armbar against Jacqueline Amora. Before that, she had won in December of 2022. So she hasn't won since 2022. I mean, not much hype behind her. She's not that entertaining of a fighter. I hate to be mean. You know, I think the Poliana fight, probably I would have gone with Poliana. But as for Julia Pawlowski, here's an interesting one. The 26-year-old, the minus 150 favorites from Rio de Janeiro, of her 12 wins, 4 KOs, 3 submissions, of her 4 losses, never been finished. Her 2 losses in the UFC are to Jasmine Jasu Davicius and Josephine Knutson. Other than that, she beat Patricia Alujas. Now, Jasmine Jasu Davicius is very talented, Canadian fighter. I believe she's ranked number 14 in the women's flyweight division. And that actually, that was up in weight, so Julia might be coming down for this fight. Corey, I mean, this one's tough. This one's tough for me because with these unranked women, you never know who's going to show up. You know, maybe you'll get a killer. Maybe you'll get the more stagnant. But Julia, when she last fought Josephine Knutson in June of this year, she was actually on the grappling side of things doing better, whereas she was at a striking deficit, which is weird for Josephine Knutson because usually she's leaning on her grappling more. So Julia taking this on short notice. Corey McKenna, I don't even know. It's going to be a toss-up for me. I mean, as we look at this, okay, Julia was outstruck last fight, was good at grappling. Corey McKenna, in her last fight, she was not really out anything. You know, she got submitted right away after landing a takedown. I'm going to give this one to Julia Pawlowski. We're going to give this one to Julia Pawlowski. She's the favorite, minus 150. Maybe if we were betting, I'd have done something differently, but Julia, we'll go with you. 26 years young, from Rio de Janeiro. I don't expect too much out of this one. Not to be mean, I just don't. After that, we get into some heavyweight sluggers. Here we go, guys. This is where the action starts picking up at the apex as Junior the Juggernaut Taffa, that's right, younger brother of Justin Taffa, takes on Sean the Smoke Sharaff. Junior Taffa 5-3, Sean Sharaff a perfect 4-0. Both men are 6'3", 77 inches and 75 inches, gives Sean 2 inches in reach advantage. Orthodox stance with that right hand for both of these gentlemen. Junior Taffa, 28 years old, from Australia, 5 wins, 5 KOs. Now, of his 3 losses, he has been finished twice. He was actually supposed to fight Chris Barnett, and Chris Barnett apparently pulled out of this fight due to the hurricane and issues with that, but then I have people say that he actually got injured or something else happened, and he was just making that up. I don't know. Chris Barnett is sadly not fighting. Love watching him fight, but we still get Junior Taffa, younger brother of Justin Taffa, who's gone 1-3 in the UFC. All right, not the best run so far. In 2024, he has been finished twice. He fought Marcos Rogério de Lima, who, we'll give him the benefit out there. That was short notice. He stepped in place of his brother. Marcos was ranked number 14th. He should not have been in that fight, okay? Lost that due to leg kicks. Now, in August, when he fought Walter Walker, that fight was bad. Got taken down, got heel hooked, and the ref stopped the fight when he started screaming out in pain and didn't actually tap, and then he got pissed that the fight was stopped. Just a terrible look for Junior Tafa. If you could guess what Junior Tafa's only win, in the, who is only win the UFC is over, and you guess Parker Porter, the ultimate UFC heavyweight clip farmer, yeah, you would be correct. Parker Porter, ultimate UFC knockout meme. Almost every, all your current favorite heavyweights have knocked out Parker Porter at some point in time. But yeah, Sean Sheriff, his opponent stepping in on short notice. Sean, new to the UFC, 4-0, 31 years old from California, stepping in on 5 days' notice. Okay, all of his wins, knockouts in round one. Not too much info on the guy. And this one's tricky when that's the case. But this does look like it's a slugfest. Okay, it's looking like it's going to be a slugfest right out the bat. And as I've looked at Junior Tafa's run in the UFC so far, 5-3, not a good career record. Takes on Muhammad Usman in his debut. That's right, Kamaru Usman's younger brother. And gets clinched, all right? He was held against the cage the entire fight. 12 minutes control time for Muhammad Usman. Parker Porter swung with him. He knocked him out. Marco Sergio de Lima kept distance and just leg kicked him, all right? And Walter Walker took him down. If Sean's going to win this, he's going to take him down. But I just, there's just something about short-nosed heavyweights that rarely work out. I'm going to give this to Junior Tafa. Round one knockout. Lock it in right now. It's just, one of these guys is going out in round one. Okay, and I don't know if Sean's a grappler. That's the unfortunate aspect of this. But if he is, then I'd probably go with Sean. But as of right now, don't know much on him. Haven't seen much footage. We'll give this one to Junior Tafa. Plus, I like the Tafa brothers. They're always entertaining. Heavyweight matchup over now as we head to the welterweight division as Themba the Answer Garimbo back in action against Nico the Hybrid Price. Oh my goodness, this is a fun matchup right here, ladies and gentlemen. Nico plus 225 underdog, minus 280 is the favorite in Themba Garimbo. Themba 13-4, Nico 16-7 with two no contests. 6'1 to 6', gives Themba 1 inch in height. He also has 1 inch in reach, 77-76, and they both stand in the orthodox fighting position. Nico the Hybrid Price coming in as your underdog. The 35-year-old from Florida has 10 KOs and 3 submissions of his 16 wins. Now, of his 7 losses, he's been finished 6 times, including 5 by knockout. Nico Price, almost always entertaining. Been with the UFC since 2016. This is year 8 of him being in the UFC. Some notable people that he's fought in: Alan Jobon, Vicente Luque, Randy Brown, Abdulrazak Al-Hassan, Tim Means, Jeff Neal, James Vick, Cowboy Cerrone, Michelle Pereira, you know. Actually, fun fact, Michelle Pereira, who's fighting in a main event, not this weekend, but the one after, kicked off his, or no, he didn't kick off his winning streak, but he picked up a win over Nico Price on his big win streak. So maybe we'll mention him in next week when we bring him up. But Nico Price, been active, been fighting killers ever since. You know, he's actually the man who Robbie Lawler retired against, who he got knocked out in 38 seconds. But he came back in June, fought Alex Morono, used his grappling in that one to win that matchup. So Nico Price is coming into this one with a win, which honestly, I'm happy for. Him, you know, he's a good fighter, paying his dues, 35 years old, from Florida. Hopefully he hasn't been hit with the hurricane. Unfortunately for him, he's taking on absolute killer in the minus 280 favorite Themba Garimbo, 33 years old, from Zimbabwe. Of his 13 wins, 2 KOs and 6 submissions. Of his 4 losses, he has been finished 3 times, including his debut in February of 2023, where he was submitted. But after that, beat Takashi Sato in May of 2023. Earlier this year in February, had a 30-second knockout of Pete Rodriguez, so dirty. Came back in May, outgrappled Ramiz Brahimash to a unanimous decision. There was Themba Garimbo. A lot of people might recognize him from the video of The Rock giving a UFC fighter a house. This was him. I love Themba Garimbo. He's the definition of inspiration. Keep fighting. This is a step up. He is continuously taking steps up in competition. Okay, you got Takashi Sato, Pete Rodriguez, and then you took on a guy, Ramiz Brahimash, who's a legit grappler. Now you take on a guy, Nico Price, who is not scared to shy away from a fight. We are going to go with Themba Garimbo. I don't know how, but being it that Nico Price's chin isn't what it all used to be, we're going to say round two TKO for Themba Garimbo. He's a fun fighter. I enjoy him. This one should be entertaining. Following that, we head to the men's featherweight division as Jonathan JSP Pierce takes on Pat Sabatini. I'm so surprised they haven't fought yet. These two are the definition of they've fought in almost every unranked featherweight out there except for each other. Jonathan Pierce, 14-6. Pat Sabatini, 18-5. 6'5'8" gives Jonathan 4 inches in height. He also has 1 inch of reach, 71-70. Switch stance for Jonathan Pierce, orthodox for Pat Sabatini. Coming in this one, Jonathan Pierce is the underdog at -135. He is the favorite. Pat Sabatini is the underdog. The odds flipped. What do you know? This one, matchmakers can't really piece it together. Jonathan Pierce, 32 years old from Arizona. Of his 14 wins, 9 KOs and 2 submissions. Of his 6 losses, he has been finished 4 times, including 3 of those by submission. Jonathan, sadly on a 2-fight losing streak. Before that, he had been on a 5-fight winning streak. Been with the UFC since 2019. I mean, biggest win, he TKO'd Makwan Amirkani, beat Darren Elkins. But finally, he got some real competition in Joe Anderson Brito and David Onama and just couldn't hang with them. He is a grappler through and through. Through his, what is this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, through his 8 UFC fights so far, he has landed, doing some quick maths, holy cow, 31 takedowns. Goodness me. He loves to grapple, but, you know, the feet is where he runs into some issues. His opponent, Pat Sabatini, it's a similar game plan. It's a similar game plan for the underdog, Pat Sabatini, 33 years old from Pennsylvania. Of his 18 wins, 1 KO and 12 submissions. Of his 5 losses, he's been KO'd 3 times. This is a matchup of grapplers. Pat had been on a crazy win streak before he ran to Damon Jackson in 2022. After that, picked up his last win in June of 2023 with a round 2 submission of Lucas Almeida. Most recently fought Diego Lopez in November of 2023 at UFC 295 and got knocked out in a minute and a half. Look, not going to hold that Diego Lopez loss against him. Pat Sabatini, super talented, but so is Jonathan Pierce. This is a toss-up. These two guys just, it's so hard to pick between them. They have such similar styles, but I'm going to give this to Pat Sabatini, and I'm actually going to say by submission. The stats point to it. Two grapplers going at each other. Pat Sabatini, more on the grappling side. Jonathan Pierce, of his 6 losses, half of them are by being submitted. That's what we're going to be riding with for this one. It's a close one. It's a close one. I'm surprised this is not on the main card, honestly. I really am. I'm surprised they didn't throw someone on the main card. But then again, they could always shuffle the card around. It's an Apex event. No one really cares. With that, we get into our main card, presumably, unless the bout order switches around. And we head to the men's flyweight division again as CJ Vergara takes on Ramazan Temirulan Tamirov. What in the world is your name, Ramazan? I absolutely love it. CJ Vergara, 12-5. Ramazan, 17-2. 5'6 to 5'4 gives CJ 2 inches in height. He also has 5 inches in reach, 68-63. Orthodox fighting position for both of these flyweights. CJ coming into this one, actually won my award last year for biggest comeback of all time, or of the year, against Daniel Lacerda, not of all time. The 33-year-old from Texas is a +210 underdog. Of his 12 victories, 7 KOs. Of his 5 losses, he's been submitted twice. He was actually supposed to fight Azamat Maksoum August 3rd, but of course he pulled out of that fight. In step Charles Johnson. Yet again, the rest is history. I always love when upsets happen, but yeah. CJ Vergara hasn't fought since March of earlier this year. Got out-grappled by Asu Almabayev, taken down 9 times. Last time he won, July of 2023. You know, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. You go 2-0, comeback of the year in 2023, starting off 2024 with an L, looking to rebound towards the latter part of the year. We'll have to see how CJ does against the debuting Ramazan Tamirov. Ramazan is a -265 favorite, 27 years young from Uzbekistan, currently on a 9-fight win streak. Of his 17 victories, 10 KOs and 1 submission. Of his 2 losses, he's been submitted once. This should be competitive. I love to see this. Ramazan just screams grappler to me, though. There's just something about these guys coming from Eastern Europe, that entire region. They are good. They're taking over the UFC. CJ, you could pull off another upset here, but Ramazan, the win streak, the territory of the world he's coming from, we'll give him the victory in this one. And, you know, 10 knockouts, 1 sub. I like to go with a knockout then. Maybe in round 2. That just seems to be the round CJ Vergara usually gets cracked in. Something about that round historically in his career. But might add to you that CJ Vergara, the last loss before Asua Mabayev, is the guy in the main event, Tatsuro Taira. So I think CJ Vergara is very game. He can come out, prepare. But Ramazan Temeryev, he just has the name of a future UFC champion. Just in my opinion. After that, welterweight division, another veteran status here. Another veteran matchup here. As Daniel D-Rod Rodriguez finally back in action as he takes on Alex the Great White Morono. Just two legends in the game. Daniel's coming in as the favorite, -205. Alex, the +170 underdog. Daniel Rodriguez, 17-5 professional record. Alex Morono, 24-10. 6'1" to 5'11" gives Daniel 2 inches in height over Alex, and he has 2 inches in reach as well. 74-72, southpaw with that left hand for Daniel, orthodox with the right for Alex Morono. Daniel Rodriguez back in action. Last time he fought was in June of this year, where he lost a decision to Calvin Gastelum. Very close decision, might I add, for that fight. Before that, he had been knocked out by Ian Machado Gary. And before that, he had been submitted by Neil Magny. So it is a 3-fight losing streak for Daniel. The 37-year-old is from Las Vegas. Of his 17 victories, he has 8 KOs and 4 subs. So he, like I said, he is a finisher. Now, of his 5 losses, he's been finished only twice. Those 2 losses have came in 2 of his last 3 fights. Daniel, been with the UFC since 2020. He's had some good moments. You know, he's beaten Tim Means before. He's beaten Mike Perry. He's beaten Kevin Lee, Li Jingliang. But as of late, taking on higher level competition, he's been getting his butt whooped left, right, and center. Lost on the grappling side of things against Calvin Gastelum, which ended up being the deciding factor in that fight. He did look great on the feet, though. So I'll give him that. D-Rod looked great on the feet, and Alex Morono is someone who also usually likes to lean on the feet more than the grappling. Alex is 34 years old from Texas. Of Alex's 24 wins, he has 6 KOs and 7 subs. Of his 10 losses, he's only ever been KO'd twice, which I do find pretty fascinating. Last time that happened was December of 2022, where Santiago Ponzinibbio pulled out a crazy comeback, down 2.5 rounds, gets a knockout in round number 3, which was unfortunate. But Alex Morono, unfortunately, lost Nico Price, as we mentioned. Before that, beat Court McGee earlier this year in April. Alex, interesting career so far in the UFC. Been with them 8 years since 2016. Biggest name he's fought, Anthony Pettis. He actually holds a win over Donald Cerrone. There you go. Biggest win of his career. Alex not coming in with the best momentum. D-Rod, I think, looked pretty good in a loss. I'm going to give this one to Daniel Rodriguez, snapping the losing streak, getting back in the win column. Plus, oddly enough, despite being in the Apex, he's technically at home in Las Vegas. The Apex is in Las Vegas, so D-Rod will ride with you for this matchup. After that, we get into our fourth to last fight. Now we get into some good ones, guys. Now I'm interested. Grant Dawson, KGD Dawson, takes on Hafa Gifted Garcia. Grant Dawson, a -400 favorite. Hafa Garcia, the +300 underdog. Grant is 21-2-1, one draw for him. Hafa Garcia, 16-3. 5'10" to 5'7" gives Grant 3 inches in height. He also has 2 inches in reach, 72-70. Switch stance for Grant, orthodox for Hafa Garcia. Grant Dawson, -400 favorite. This was a guy who was supposed to break into the rankings. He was at one point 20-1 on a 19-fight win streak. It was incredible. He was doing incredible. And I mean, Grant from Nebraska, 30 years old. Of those 21 wins, 4 KOs and 13 subs, he was a finisher. Then, shockingly, he gets his first main event, gets knocked out in 33 seconds by Bobby King Green. Unreal. Unreal. That was last October. Came back in June, grappled Joe Selecki to a victory, but it was just outstandingly shocking that Bobby Green knocked him out. And that led to Bobby Green getting some big opportunities as well. Another main event opportunity, fought Patty Pimblett. He had some big shots. Actually fought on UFC 300. Bobby Green, legend of the game. But Grant Dawson, you know, fought a bunch of unranked guys, finally ran into a legit competitor, and Bobby Green got knocked out. Did pick up a win over Joe Selecki, as I mentioned. 3 takedowns in that fight, 14 minutes of control time. Dude, he is a grappler through and through. Now, as for Hafa Garcia, he is someone who does like to grapple himself. Hafa Garcia, 30 years old as well, from Mexico. Of Hafa Garcia's 16 career victories, 1 knockout, 8 submissions. Of his 3 losses, he's never been finished. Came into the UFC, 2-fight losing streak, sadly, then picked up 2 wins, then lost to Jagar Close in July of 2022, but is currently on a 2-fight winning streak, beat Mahashat in December of 2022, last time he fought, April of 2023, against Clay Guida. He outboxed him to a victory. So I've seen in both those fights, the Mahashat fight, 6 takedowns, it was all grappling. The Clay Guida fight, all fought on the feet, 141 significant strikes to 63. Didn't even attempt to take that. I think he attempted one late, maybe. All I know, Hafar Garcia is super game, but this is the apex. Grant Dawson, grappler. I doubt he's getting caught. We've seen him only get caught once in his entire UFC run so far. We'll give it to Grant. We'll say by decision. Boring grappling. I'm basic. I'm basic when it comes to my predictions for some of these. But hey, Hafar Garcia. Yeah, I also think it's the tenure off. Hafar Garcia hasn't fought since April of 2023. That's quite the break to take. Then to come against someone in Grant Dawson who just fought, what, 3 months ago? Yeah, that's going to hurt you. Third to last fight, Chidi Inchukane. Chidi Bang Bang Inchukane takes on Jared Night Train Gooden in the men's welterweight division. Chidi Inchukane, 35 years old. Ooh, he is the minus 185 favorite. Jared Gooden, 30 years old, is the plus 150 underdog. Chidi, 23-10. Jared, 23-9. 6'3 to 6', gives Chidi 3 inches in height. He also has 3 inches in reach, 80 to 77. Both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Chidi, bang, bang. 35 years old, as I mentioned, from Las Vegas. Of his 23 wins, 14 KOs and 1 submission. Not too bad. Of his 10 losses, he's been finished 8 times. That is really bad. That is really rough. Been with the UFC since 2022. You know, has had some great moments. 16-second knockout of Marc-Andre Barriot in his debut. Then knocked out Dusko Todorovic in round 1. Then had one of the craziest 2-round fights I've ever seen against Gregory Rodriguez. After that, split decision loss to Albert Durav. Comes back against Michael Okejsek, gets knocked out, but drops down to welterweight, picks up a decision win over Raz McKee, which was a split decision back in March, but I won't lie, he handsomely won that, not convincingly, but got it done. So he is coming in with a little bit of momentum. Now, Jared Gooden, his opponent, 30 years old, I mentioned, from Georgia, the United States. You know, we have a lot of Georgia country fighters, Georgia, United States. This boy is from Atlanta. Of his 23 victories, 11 knockouts and 8 submissions. That's right. He's a finisher. Of his 9 losses, he's been knocked out twice. This is kind of his second run in the UFC. It almost feels like Jared Gooden at one point went 1-3, got cut, fought his way back, stepped in on short notice against Carlston Harris. They then rewarded him with one more shot in the UFC against Wellington Turman last December, where he got around to rear naked chokehold. So Jared's back, looking to get it going, but I'm going to be honest, I think that there's a certain man in Bang Bang who's coming to bring the heat. I'm going with Chidi Inchukane. Look, he had a rough time dropping down from middleweight to welterweight, but now he is assimilated. He has morphed into this new form at welterweight. He's adjusted, I should better say, to this new weight class. I think he'll be ready for someone in Jared Gooden. It's the apex. Anything can happen, but we're going to go with Chidi Inchukane from what I've seen. After that, we get to our co-main event of the evening, and it will be Brad Tavares taking on Jun Young, the Iron Turtle Park. Guys, I want you to guess who I'm going to pick just off of how freaking awesome that freaking nickname is of Jun Young Park. Brad Tavares, 20-10. Jun Young, 17-6. 6'1 to 5'10 gives Brad, what is that, 3 inches in height, I believe? Let me mark that down. 3 inches in height going to Brad Tavares. The reach, 1 inch as well for Brad Tavares, 74-73, but genuinely pretty simple. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Brad Tavares, legend of the game. He is the plus 145 underdog, 36 years old from Las Vegas. Of his 20 wins, 5 KOs and 2 subs. Of his 10 losses, half of them he's been knocked out in. He was actually supposed to fight July 20th. This fight was supposed to take place, I should better say, between both these men on July 20th. Sadly, and it got rebooked, but now we get today, so I guess not sadly. I guess we get this fight nonetheless. Brad is currently coming off a loss to Gregory Rodriguez in February. Got knocked out in round 3. He is also 1-3 in his last 4, be it those losses are to Driscus Duplessis, Bruno Silva, and Gregory Rodriguez. His win is over Chris Weidman last August, so not too bad. Been with the UFC since 2010. Wow, this is year 14 for Brad Tavares. Some notable names that he has fought in: Yoel Romero, Tim Bosch, Nate Marquardt, Robert Whittaker, Christophe Jacot, Israel Adesanya, Edmund Shahbazyan. Like I said, one of his losses was to Driscus Duplessis, who DDP couldn't finish, fascinatingly enough. Brad, look, been with the UFC a while. He's up there, 36 years old, near the end of his run. His opponent, Jun Young Park, the minus 170 favorite, is 33 years old from South Korea. Of his 17 victories, he has 5 KOs and 6 submissions. Of his 6 losses, he's been knocked out 3 times. Jun Young Park comes into this one 7-3 in the UFC. His only losses are to Anthony Hernandez, who's in the main event next weekend, Gregory Rodriguez, one of the biggest knockout artists on the roster, and most recently in his last fight in December, where he lost a split decision to Andre Munoz, who was a very talented grappler, bounced in and out of the bottom 15. Let's not hold that against him. Before that, he had been on a four-fight win streak, 3 of those coming by rear naked chokehold. Jun Young Park, talented as always. I will say he is a grappler, but he can also strike. You know, I've seen him knock down Albert Durov in their fight. I've seen him take down Joseph Holmes, Nestalulin. Him and Eric Anders had a competitive fight where he was taken down. But Brad Tavares just doesn't really strike me as someone who's getting finished by submission. He's never been finished by submission. This could be the fight. This would be the location just at a random Apex event. But we are going to ride with Jun Young Park. He's got the awesome nickname of the Iron Turtle. He's been more active than Brad Tavares. He's getting more momentum here and there. We're going to go with Jun Young Park for this one. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we've empowered through this cold that I have. And as we reach the main event, it is the best fight on the entire card. It's rare. Sometimes the main event isn't the best fight on the card. This time it is. As the number one ranked contender in the men's flyweight division, Brandon Royval, takes on the number 5 ranked Tatsuro Taira. Raw dog, Brandon Royval. That's his nickname. Goofy nickname. Brandon, plus 165 underdog. Tatsuro, in his first main event, minus 200 favorite. Actually, his second main event. I forgot. They gave him a main event earlier this year. Brandon is 16-7. Tatsuro Taira, 16-0. 70 inches to 68 inches gives Tatsuro 2 inches in height. Brandon has 2 inches in... oh my gosh, I said that backwards. Dang it. 5'9 to 5'7. Brandon's got 2 inches in height. 70 to 68. Tatsuro has 2 inches in reach. There you go. Brandon southpaw with that left hand. Orthodox for Tatsuro with the right. Let's start off with the number one contender, Brandon Royval. No mystery to main events. He had a main event earlier this year in February. Won a split decision over Brandon Moreno. Good stuff there. Before that, he also had a title shot against Alexander Pantoja last December. Pretty good. The 32-year-old from Colorado has 4 KOs and 9 submissions. So 13 of his 16 wins coming by finish. Of his 7 losses, he's only ever been finished twice. Those losses, Brandon Moreno and Alexander Pantoja, your last two champions. And very interestingly enough, he's had a very entertaining UFC run so far. Only been the distance 3 times, albeit of those 3 times, 2 have been in his last 2 fights. Brandon, entertaining, you know, we're not picking him. Okay, I just want to let you know, we're not picking him. We're picking our boy. He was my prediction for having the biggest rise of 2024 in the men's flyweight division. Win or lose, I think he still had the biggest rise in the division as Tatsuro Taira, the 24-year-old from Japan, who comes in undefeated 6-0 with 12 finishes, 5 by knockout, 7 by submission. He's currently 7-0 in the UFC, 6-0, my bad. He's on the run of a lifetime. Absolutely incredible. And by the way, only been the distance twice. All right, so I have his 6 wins in the UFC, 4 by finish. He's beaten CJ Vergara by armbar. He's submitted to Jesus Aguilera by triangle armbar. He's TKO'd Carlos Hernandez. He injured Alex Perez in their fight, and it couldn't even continue. Got a performance of the night for how good he was doing in that dang fight. Tatsuro Taira, I don't know the method. I don't know what round, but I'm telling you, he's getting a finish, and he's getting the victory, and he's getting the number one contender shot. And Tatsuro Taira, who is 24 years old, is going to be next in line for a title shot. I just love this man, Tatsuro Taira. He's got a badass name. Tatsuro Taira is a badass name, if you ask me. From Japan, looking to break into the Japanese market, Yosef Kayasakura. He's from Japan, coming on into the UFC. That would be a super fight you could do in China. I'm here for it. Now, as we analyze both of these guys, Royval, I've seen more so in his last few fights, he's wanted to keep things on the feet. He has wanted to keep things on the feet. And Tatsuro, his grappling has looked very good. His grappling has looked very, very good. And one thing that also Tatsuro has is power, okay? When he lands a big punch, he cracks you, Okay, this has happened multiple times. On his debut against Carlos Candelara, against CJ Vergara, he wobbled him. Against Carlos Hernandez, he dropped him. Against Alex Perez, landing big shots. Brandon Royval is just a, how do I put it? He is a volume striker. There you have it. Last two fights, 256 combined significant strikes. Not a single knockdown, not a single wobble. Taken down 11 times combined in his last two fights as well. His knockouts have come, actually his one knockout is from a knee he landed against Matthias Nicolau, so that's just about it. Tetsuro, I think, is better all around. It would also make me really sad if Brandon Royval won, because I'm a Tetsuro Taira fan, so there's your bias there. But we are riding with Tetsuro Taira, my Japanese prince, my sweet little boy. I'm rooting for your victory. I really hope he gets it. I really hope he does. He deserves it. Let me tell you, he definitely, definitely deserves it. And with that win, he'd be ranked number one, and a title shot would be in his future. Tetsuro Taira, take it to the bank. If you want me to give a specific prediction, we'll say round two TKO again, because both of his knockouts he's gotten in the UFC have came in round number two. That'll do it, folks. UFC Vegas 98, your predictions, your official predictions for this episode. Fun little episode, guys. Bal and my cold, I don't know if you can hear it, but we're toughing it out. We're looking to bring good content all month. I'm excited for it. This will be episode 5 already in October, and we are, what, 11 days in? By the time that I finished recording this, by the time you're listening to this, maybe it's past that. My goal was 15 episodes. I don't know if we're going to get to that. I kind of want to bring in some more special guests, maybe some recurring guests. We'll have to see. But ladies and gentlemen, take all these predictions to the bank. Lock in your NFL weekly pick'ems. I wish you luck in everything. Make the future your own future. Is that make the future your own future? A little motivation for you. Guys, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.